He said TJ is going to be speaking on steps 8 and 9, which are made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, and made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So TJ, we invite you up here.
Good evening, everybody. My name's TJ, and I'm an alcoholic. And I wasn't nervous until I saw all these people flowing in here and said, oh my God, where were they in step one? So, first of all, some of you were here when we did steps 4 and 5, 6 and 7. And Kevin was kind enough to copies, and actually he made some new copies of the lists that I had gone over with you, and they are over there for your consumption, and you can swipe them and so on and so forth. I already swiped a couple of copies for myself. So, one of the things I go back and I use a lot of the Big Book, but I use a lot of the of Joe McHugh's books, the steps we took, and whatever the other one is, I can't remember now. One of the main things we're going to do here is carry out the decision that we made in step 3. If you remember, we go back all the way to step 3, and we're going to make this decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Well, that's what we've been doing, is trying to carry out this this decision we made in step 3. We're going to be removing the things that block us from God. The biggest thing blocking us from God is guilt, shame, and remorse. Harms done to other people, etc., etc. There's no way God can control our minds. So we've asked God to take over our thinking, and if you remember, our will and our lives are our thinking and our actions. So there's no way he can take care of that unless there's no way he can take care of that if our minds are dominated by the past. So that's why we need to remove those things that were back there in step 4 and 5, and 6 and 7. Okay, so now we're going to remove those things. So step eight is really simple. Let's make a list. And you already did that, unless you burned it. Whoops! Now you got to go back and make another list. My first sponsor, said, "You want me to burn that for you?" And I said, no, I'll take care of that myself. And he said, well, before you do, remember one thing. We're going to need this later on. Oh, okay. So, as we're making this list, as we've taken a look at it, and we have all these names written down, we go over this list and decide, is there anybody else that I owe an amend to? Is there anything else I need to do? And if the answer is yes, go ahead and write that name down. But before you continue, go back to that fourth and fifth step sheet that we talked about and fill it out. Because you've made a mistake and you have forgotten something. And you don't want to forget something or somebody. Go back and do it. And continue on. Because what we're trying to do more than anything is to get to the root causes. In order to get to the root causes, we have to see our involvement in it. If we don't see our involvement in it, any amends you're going to make are going to be worthless. They're going to be hollow. It's horrible. And you'll get no benefit out of it. So the second part, so that's the first part of step eight. Second part is the willingness. And the key is the willingness. Even when we get to step nine, the key is willingness. If you're not willing to do this, you've stalled. And in order sometimes to get that willingness the only willingness you need is to just begin. Start with the first one. If you can start with the first one, you've become willing. Okay? The rest will come, but you have to become willing to at least begin. And we'll get to more of this in step nine, but actually it will free us up even in step eight, the willingness to do this. You need to be 100% willing in step eight to look at this. And even on a case-by-case basis, you need to be 100% willing to do this. If you're not, you have failed somewhere along the line. And usually by this point in working the steps, the willingness is there. You've already gone through all the pain and torture that a sponsee or a sponsor can possibly put you through. This should be okay by now. So step nine now tells us to make direct amends. And then it says, wherever possible. Please do not be confused. It does not say whenever possible. It says wherever possible. Again, the key is willingness. For the wherever possible. Except to do so would injure them or others. Again, and I can't stress this enough, the key is the willingness to get this done. If you are willing to do this, God will provide you with the wherever. So, in a roundabout way, I guess what I'm trying to tell you is, you need to let your higher power decide where the wherever is going to come. Okay? Don't go rushing right out and go, I'm sorry. Because what you're really doing is when you're telling people that you're sorry, you're not making an amend. You're telling them what you are. I'm sorry. I'm just a sorry human being. That's what you're doing. When you continually say, I'm sorry, because the people have heard this all before. I mean, I'm positive my wife heard, I'm sorry, over and over and over again. I'm sure my boss heard, oh, I'm sorry, I won't do that again, over and over and over again. And it rings so hollow. You're just describing yourself now. So what we're going to do is we're going to divide this list, once we make it, into four columns. Not three, four. First column is right now. These are the amends you're going to do right now. Then we have the later. So we have a list of the ones we're going to do right now. Then we have a list, and that list will be probably pretty short. Then we're going to have a list of the later, after I get done with that first column. And then we got the maybe I will, maybe I won't. And then we have the last column, which is no, not doing it. Never going to do it. Never, ever going to do it. Boy, I'm going through this really fast. Leaves way too much time for questions. Okay. So the next thing we're going to do, and when I'm telling you all this, this is what I do for my sponsees, is we're going to go over that list again, and we're going to remove those impossible ones. You know, the ones that are gone, are deceased. You can't make amends to them. Now, I've heard lots of people talk about, well, I wrote them a letter, and then I took it out to the beach, and I burned it, and that's nice. But that's not making an amend. Not at all. So we're going to remove the impossible ones, the ones you can't find, the ones that are deceased, ones that moved away and you have no idea where they are, or sometimes the ones you don't know who they were. So remove those from your list. A lot of those that you're removing, especially from the ones you can't find and so on and so forth, you know, when you are writing them a letter and you're going to take it out to the beach and burn it, it's an ego trip. That's all it is. It's just our ego playing games with us. At least that's my interpretation of it. The next thing we're going to do is the injury list. We're going to remove those people that are going to injure, that could be injured by us making an amend. And I struggled a lot with this for myself, but I got a really good example when I was with my fourth sponsor. And he decided that, in fact, we had done one of these Joe McHugh book seminars together, and it was great, and we did our fourth step together, and then we did our fifth step together, and so on and so forth. And he had something in his fifth step that he should have taken to the grave with him. He chose not to. And I cautioned him, and now he was my sponsor. And I said to him, I just think this is a really bad idea. And he trotted off to some kind of a recovery seminar. It was not an AA thing, but it was some kind of a recovery seminar. And he came back and he said, no, I did it. While we were there, I did it. Oh, I can truly tell you, it was the biggest mistake I'd ever seen anybody make. I'm not going to tell you what it was, but I can tell you that the family was crushed. Just crushed. And I watched this family get torn apart. And I kept thinking, my goodness, this is something, this guilt, shame, and remorse that you had over this whole thing, this is something you should have taken to the grave with you. Why would you do this? You did this for selfish, self-centered reasons. And I'm going to tell you, the reasons that you're making an amend to somebody are selfish and self-centered, you're making a huge mistake. Now, I'll also tell you that making an amend is not for the person that you're making the amend to. It's for you. It's for you to decide. It's for you to discover the things that are blocking you from your higher power. Most selfish, self-centered people see others as something to be used. And that's what I saw. I saw other people as something to be used. Somewhere through this, you're going to begin to see other people as you're going to see yourself as being useful to other people. Does that make sense, what I just said? And then we're going to talk about so after you've made this list and you've removed all these people that you have to remove from your list, then you can begin to go out and make an amends. And I suggest that you start with the nows, and once you get through the right nows, the laters become right now, and then you can move on to the maybe, maybe not, because they're probably now going to become necessary. And the I'll nevers, that's up to you. But I'll bet you somewhere down the line that the wherever possible becomes possible. And maybe it doesn't. The key is the willingness to do it. Once you become willing to do it, 9 times out of 10, that guilt, shame, and remorse has been removed already. And then there's this thing called the living amends. And at first, I didn't believe any of this crap. I thought, no, that's not making an amend. And then I went to make an amend to my boss, the guy that had taken me to detox and paid me all the while I was in detox and in rehab and made sure that my family was doing fine. And then when I got out of rehab, you know, I kind of made a mess of my job and didn't really give a crap about what was going on around me and really wasn't working the 12 steps. But somewhere down the line, when I'm working on my, I don't know, my second or third sponsor, you know, his name popped up again, and I thought, you know, I really need to make an amend for this. And at one point, I had said something to the vice president of the company. I told him to do a sexual act that was absolutely impossible. If everybody understands what that means. And the president of the company pulled me into his office and threatened to fire me because I was this huge jerk. And he said, "You owe this man an apology." And then he gave me the rest of the day off. And I thought, you know, he's right. I owe this man an apology. So I went into his office and I told him how sorry I was. But really what I was doing was I was telling him exactly who I was. I'm just sorry. And my boss called me back into his office and he said, give me one good reason. Does this thing need to be... Okay. Is that better?
Yep.
Okay. I don't remember where I was. Oh, my boss called me back into his office. And he said, give me one good reason why I shouldn't fire you. And I said, I don't remember exactly everything I said, but basically I said, if you'll not fire me, I will do my very best to be a good employee and to show you that I am a good human being. And I tried to make an amend right there. And he stopped me and he said, you can tell me how sorry you are all damn day, but I don't give a shit. I want to see results. And I knew right away that this living amend thing might be a pretty damn good idea. That I had to put my best foot forward at work. And I had to prove to these people that they were right in keeping me on, I guess. That I was a good human being. That deep down inside, I felt bad about all my past performances. And I still was struggling at the time, especially, you know, after realizing all that, and after beginning to work what I thought was a pretty damn good program, except at home, our situation at home was deteriorating rather rapidly. Now, you would have thought that, you know, years down the road that would have happened. You know, I would have seen that, but I didn't. I can't tell you why I didn't. But I didn't. And I thought to myself, I can go, after all the crap that my wife and I went through, I thought to myself, I can go to my wife and I can tell her how sorry I am. And all it would be really doing is just telling her who I was. So I decided to just do the living amends. I'm going to be the best husband I can possibly be. Now, I think sometimes I do a really good job. And I can tell you that sometimes I don't. But I do the best that I possibly can, because that's what the program teaches us. So now that we have begun to remove these things that have been blocking us from God, because that's what we're really doing in 6 and 7, is we're discovering what these things are, and in 8 and or in 6 and 7 we're trying to get rid of them. In 4 and 5 we discover what they are. In 6 and 7 we try to know what they are. Now we're going to try to improve upon all that. And now in 8 and 9 we're going to clean our side of the street. And now that we've done that, we've tapped this unsuspected inner resource of strength. And I wasn't so sure that I had tapped this unsuspected inner resource of strength. And I thought, ah, man, I still have this one little resentment, you know? And this resentment got to be really big. And a lot of you people have heard me lead, and you've heard me talk about this before. So I'm down hunting with my first sponsor, and I've got this huge resentment, and I just can't let it go, and it's killing me, and it's stupid. It's just so stupid. And if I told you about it, you'd go, "What were you thinking?" And I don't know. But I got this huge resentment and I can't let it go, and it's killing me. I don't want to drink. That's the furthest thing from my mind. But I don't want to live. And it's the most god-awful place to be. Not wanting to live is just the most horrible place to be. Now, here's this guy that has been working the steps and knows all about this stuff and has taken other people through the steps. Why is this happening to me? Because I have this resentment. And resentment, as the big book claims, is the number one killer. And I believe that it is. So I've got this resentment. I'm on the side of the mountain. And I have a rifle in my hands. And I don't want to live. Not a good combination. I took advice from myself, kind of, but I took advice from everyone that I think I've ever heard in this program. And all you need to do is to go back to step one and ask for help. And that's what I did. And on this one stupid resentment, I started with step one and I worked my way all the way through it. And I tapped that inner resource of strength. And I was able to get through this. It was sufficient enough to keep me sober. And it was sufficient enough to keep me alive. To become grateful. To learn about these steps. And we'll discover more as we go along. So, the thing that I wanted to, the reason that I was telling you this story about this is because when I asked for help, this funny thing happened to me. I don't know what exactly, how I can exactly explain it, but when I asked for help that day, on the side of the mountain, I was on my knees, and my foot that I had taken out of my boot, because I was going to pull the trigger with my toe. So my foot it was freezing, and I'm on my knees on the side of this mountain, and my foot's in the snow, and I'm telling you, this feeling came over me like I've never felt before. I felt like everything was going to be okay. Like it didn't matter what happened at this point. Everything was going to be okay. I didn't see a flash of light, thank God. Nothing strange happened. Oh, there might have been a deer or two down there at the bottom of the mountain laughing their asses off at me, but nothing really happened. I put my boot back on and I felt okay. I felt like no matter what I did, everything was going to be okay. I went home and I got myself a new sponsor and we worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous again. Imagine that. All over this stupid resentment. I had found that inner strength. I had found the one thing, if you've been with me all along in these 12 steps, I found the one thing that I lacked from the very first step. I lacked that power. That power greater than myself. I found it. and I'm so grateful for that. So that's all I got on step 9. If you have any questions, you can ask them next week.
Thank you, TJ. So now we have time for questions from our audience. If you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll bring you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom, go ahead and speak up whenever you get the chance. So does somebody want to get us started with a question for TJ?
Good.
There's always one.
Hey, TJ, thanks. Hear me now?
Yes.
Hey, TJ, thanks. So you mentioned different kinds of amends, you know, the right now, later, and the never. So my question is, when you're working with someone, how do you help them deal with the nevers, and how do you take the nevers off the never list and get them done?
Well, I have found that people that really want to work this program, that really want to get through this, that are honest with themselves and are honest with you, those nevers melt away rather quickly. They'll become maybes, and once the laters get resolved, those maybes become nows, and the those maybes or those nevers, it's kind of like they move up the list, and eventually they become wherever possible. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Hi, TJ. I got a question following up with what Jack was talking about there, because I've done it the same way you've done it. But I always have a hard time reconciling the willingness in step 8. As soon as I say, well, put that one on the never list. Because if you put somebody on the never list in my head and I can't get over it, you haven't become willing in step 8. So if I do that, did I actually do step 8, and am I asking my guys to do step 8? And how do I reconcile that?
Well, if you've become willing, when you begin doing the nows and the laters, those nevers aren't nevers anymore. They kind of move up the list. And if they're not moving up the list, you didn't do step 8. You didn't become willing. Does that make sense?
To some degree, yes, and still to some degree, no, because I will chat with my guys about their whole list and tell them that this is where you're going. This is it here. And I get that look. You know, do I really got to go there? And I'm like, well, you got to prepare to go there, because that's what this
right.
is all about. You have to prepare to go there, and sometimes they just we move forward, just like you said. I always say we move forward and do it, and it gets done.
Right.
But I still, in my head, this is about me and my thinking. Have we really done step 8? If I absolutely say I'm never going to do that one. Because I haven't become willing.
Well, if you haven't become willing, then you're right. You have not done step 8 on all those people. You've become willing on some of those people, but you haven't become willing on all those people.
Partial willingness.
Yeah, kind of like a partial willingness. The thing that I know for sure is, yes, willingness is the key. And if you have that willingness, you know, those people that we talked about that you removed from the list because you can't find them, or they're deceased or whatever, those people, that's that willingness to do that has removed that part, that portion of it for you. That guilt, shame, and remorse from those people, you've already removed that because you've become willing to do it. You just can't do it, okay? But if you've gotten to that never section and you're not going to do it, even if it comes up, then you haven't become willing. Then you have not finished step eight on that particular person or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hi, TJ. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much. I love the I'm sorry. I'm saying I'm a sorry person. I've never heard that before. I love it. So as you were talking, I was thinking, and this never occurred to me, but I wonder if you see any relevance in a sponsor looking at the newcomer and wondering, or is there any relationship between how the newcomer comes into the rooms, whether they've self-referred themselves, so to speak, and had that awakening or that notion that they are out of control, as opposed to somebody like you, who some people come in this way, they're hauled in from work, or you're hauled and you're told, hey, you're going to have to, I'm sending you to rehab. Do you see a difference in how people are able to get through not only the steps, but when we get to make a list of all persons we have harmed, maybe that some people, I'm wondering, that who may have been brought in to recovery because they were threatened with losing their jobs, maybe they're not ready to make amends because they have so many resentments. And I wonder if you see a relationship.
Like maybe they haven't received that gift of desperation.
Well, they don't see it that way, right? They'd like to blame the employer or the other people for saying, hey, this is it. The jig is up. Do you see a relationship? Because it never occurred to me until you said that you still had not really come clean on the resentments because you still resentful at your employer or your vice president or wherever the heck it was. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it just took me a while to find that gift of desperation. Because I did, I mean, some of us get here and we've been, some of us get here quicker than others. And maybe the people that get here quicker than others don't have that gift of desperation
as much.
Quite
they don't
yet.
Realize it, maybe.
And maybe they don't realize it at first. But I still think that by the time we get here, by the time we get to steps 8 and 9, we should have had that gift of desperation. I mean, I haven't seen anybody that has gone. I haven't seen anybody that's gotten to the fourth step and gotten through the fourth and fifth step that hasn't been actually willing to move on. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the sponsees that I have ever had are long gone before step four.
Okay, so they're not even going. Okay,
they're
understood.
They self-read
themselves out, so
yeah.
To speak. Okay. Well, that's interesting. That just never occurred to me, any of that. Thank you.
And I will tell you this much, that I used to think that I knew exactly which guys were going to get sober and which guys weren't. Okay? I thought for sure that once I got them to the first three steps, I could tell who was going to get sober and who wasn't. So I took these four guys through the steps, and as we began, I could see, all right, that one is never going to make it. That one, he's going to make it until step three. This one might make it to step three. But this one over here, he's got it. He has got it. I know he's got it. This guy that had it was the first guy gone. This guy that I said was never going to make it is still sober today. I know nothing.
Who else has a question for TJ?
Thanks, TJ, so much. Carolyn Alcoholic. So you were talking about guilt, shame, and remorse at the beginning of your talk tonight. And where is that, like, the basis of your fourth step? Or where does guilt, shame, and remorse come in? Or were you just describing that as what blocks us off from God? I didn't really get that.
I was more describing as to what those are the things that usually block us from our higher power, and those are the things that dominate our mind most of the time, the guilt, shame, and remorse. And when those things are blocking us from our higher powers, those are the things that are doing it. Okay? And those are the things I think we need to remove before we can find that power, or that, what is it I called it? That unsuspected inner resource of strength.
Am I allowed another?
TJ, thanks again for a great session. One of the things you talked about was living amends. And if I, to kind of maybe paraphrase, it sounded like what you were saying was, don't tell me, show me.
Yeah.
And that being the case, it kind of presupposes that you have at least some proximity to that person, an employer where they get to see you routinely. Any advice for, like, take the example of a relative who lives a great distance away that you don't see all the time, as far as how to approach that?
That you're going to have to go up and make an amends for. You might have to tell them that you're sorry. But, because that's not a person you can make living amends to. However, he also may be the only big book, you may be the only big book they ever see. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, TJ. Leslie, alcoholic. I guess I had a couple questions, but let me start with the easy one.
Okay.
What exactly is an example of a never amends besides I don't want to do it?
The easiest way I can put that, and it's not really that an easy question, at least not for me, is that I owed my father an amend. Now, if you were here at the beginning, you know that my relationship with my father was not very good. And some things were done that weren't okay. But I needed to make an amend him, and he was on my never list. But I was able to make a living amend to him, even though he kind of didn't know it. He had Alzheimer's, so I helped take care of him in his last few years. So he was on my I'm never doing this list. If that makes any sense.
So, someone who, a person who you felt had done harm to you.
Yeah.
That would be an example of a living, of a never.
Yeah.
And moving into, did you ever do any spoken amend or?
Well, by the time I got to that point where a spoken amend could have been made, he wasn't there.
Okay.
I mean, he wasn't
mentally equipped to understand what you were saying. And then I have another question.
Okay.
About about this employer, like, what about money? You're saying he paid you throughout this whole time. And how would you make him, does that rate an amends? Does that, aside from just becoming the employee you should have been all along, is there any other amends that you had considered making? Or not? Is that real?
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry, I'm not meaning to
blow. What's so funny? Okay. Making the amend to my employer had nothing to do with that he had paid me. What I was doing was explaining to you how good the employer was to me and how afterwards I kind of shit all over him. And that's when I needed to make the amend. That I wasn't the employee that I should have been. Is that, does
okay.
That
okay, well, I'm going to say thank you, and because I'm always interested in financial amends because I've tripped over them myself.
Okay.
So there's, you know, if you'd like to talk about that, that would be great. And if you're not, then someone else can ask a question.
The financial amends are, you know, when we owe somebody money, if we actually owe them money, we have to do exactly what the big book says, to make an appointment with your whomever and set up a payment plan, because most of us can't pay it right off the bat anyway. I didn't owe that kind of an amend to anybody that I remember anyway.
Thank you.
I think that takes care of it. TJ.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait. No.
Oh, no.
Kevin
wants to ask that.
I got 2 minutes.
No.
Hi. He can trump him. You want to ask your question?
Oh, no. Go.
Okay. So you were talking about all this, you know, I'm just going to say, we'll say not so positive. Do you ever go over the promises with people when they kind of go, oh, you know, I'm doing this program, and I'm really not doing it anywhere.
Well,
you ever get anybody like that?
I actually did have one guy that wanted to go step by step through the promises to make sure he was gonna get what he thought he was going. He's not sober today. So, does that answer your question? I mean, when you're going through the big book and you're going through the steps with them, you're going to trip over this. I mean, you're reading it anyway. So, yeah, I've explained it as best I can anyway.
I mean, my question basically was like, somebody's doing this. I'm not feeling that spiritual well-being that I should have, and, you know, maybe going through like the promises and saying, has this happened in your life? Oh yeah, about this, about that, how about that? Oh yeah, now.
I can't say that I've had that particular occurrence. But I can tell you from my own experience, I didn't get a lot of that until after I had got rid of this last resentment, you know.
One quick one. So if I go into my home group and I cause a disturbance and I punch Colleen in the face for something, do I owe the whole meeting an amend, or do I just leave and never come back? Because it's come to that.
So wait, what? Say that again?
There was a fight that broke out in one of the meetings, okay? And that person never came back and made an amend to that meeting. So I was just taking on as the person.
Okay. So you're saying somebody in a meeting hit somebody else
Well, close to hitting them.
Okay.
There were fisticuffs. Both of them never came back. But should they owe that meeting an amend or not? Or we should be glad they didn't come back.
We should probably be glad they didn't come back. I don't know.
Okay. I would feel like I would want to apologize.
All right. I think that lets you off the hook there, TJ.